causes or some of the things that I'm seeing in therapy or just in general. One of the reasons it brings it up is because we're reading a book, and a chapter in the book was talking about the woman at the well and Jesus's conversation with her and some of the background to that story. So I want to tell you that story as well. And we'll kind of end with that. But and that it's such a relevant, it was relevant then, it's relevant now, and with the amount of people who are affected, we got to be talking about it, okay? So we can go to the first slide. We're just talking about sexual trauma can be any unwanted sexual contact. So I think in our culture, we have a lot of messages out there that are telling you that what's okay and what's not okay, and the line is way past what's okay. So coming up, you know, grabbing your butt and, you know, just doing whatever they want is actually assault. So can't do that. In childhood, there's childhood sexual abuse, which ranges in amount, duration, who, typically not violent. For the most part, actually most sexual assault or abuse happens with somebody that you know, and also that the child knows. So there's date rape. This is very common, and the story behind it sounds like really similar. So every time I hear somebody, they don't even know what's happened. So the girl will be in my office, and she's telling me the story, and then but she's owning it. Like, I shouldn't have been there. I shouldn't have done that. I didn't totally say no. I mean, I said no, but then I didn't fight. But then all of these reasons. But there's a whole lot of reasons that go into that. But if in your gut you knew you didn't want it, you didn't want it. That's it. It doesn't matter how we got there. We didn't want it. Rape as well. And then, and when I'm putting date rape and then rape, same, different though. Typically rape is a stranger and also likely more violent than date rape is often not as violent, but definitely can be. So and specifically in childhood or vulnerable adult, it's going to be grooming, which means they're going to make relationship with the child or whatever age. You know, it's going to be somebody who gets attention. So they come in with affection and attention, and if we could love people like that and love our kids like that and touch them and cuddle them and pay attention to their kid stuff, you know, even if it's like, oh my goodness, I don't have time, you know, whatever. Attention, connection, and attachment is a number one need for all people across your lifespan. And so then we're less vulnerable, okay, because they know the difference between I'm getting that bucket filled, I'm not hungry, okay? If I'm hungry, then I need attachment. Somebody told me a story about a child that when they adopted their child or came in foster care, she was 18 months old, and she just went right to the garbage to get food. That was her automatic response, was to go to the garbage to get food, because for her duration, that's how you get food. She's hungry, she goes to garbage. So when we're hungry, if our children are hungry, in any way, for affection, connection, whatever, we'll accept less than what God had intended for us. And sometimes we don't recognize it even, you know, what God had intended. But God intended perfect connection and safety and free love. Yeah, I mean that in a different way. Free. It's a gift. You give it. Love. Love is not about sex. Okay, because you can love everybody. So then there's coercion, which a lot of times date rape happens per coercion because they just get pushed further and further and further and further until they're freezing. They're frozen. They're scared. They don't feel like they can get away, even though it's implied that they could, you know, and after it's done. That's actually one of the worst because it's so confusing for people. Because they can't identify it. Like, they feel it's wrong, but he's like, oh, you know, you didn't say no. You did, you know. They can confuse them. Also, in children, too, they will tell the child that they wanted that. You want that. You like that, you know. And it's a physical body. Of course, it probably feels good. And the attention, of course, that feels good. But to a child who doesn't have the capacity to, first of all, say yes, but they're tricked. It's tricking. But the thing is that belief system gets hardwired up into the roots of this child. So then they go through life. And even though as an adult, we can be like, oh, no, you know, whatever. But if we never get to the root of this belief system that runs us, then we don't know the truth. So there's frozen. So if you did not feel like you had a choice, if anybody you ever listened to, talked to, talks about it, they didn't feel like I had a choice, it's assault, you know, you didn't feel like you had a choice. And it's traumatic. Doesn't mean it's got to be traumatized. Again, we went to, from talking about before, you can be trauma, you can experience trauma, we all do, but the resources and the movement after is important. And children are too young to choose, or when you're incapacitated. Now, some laws have changed recently, but that's ridiculous. So it's ridiculous. If you cannot consent, it is not consent. That is it. There's, can't consent, it's not consent. So we'll go to the next one. And sometimes that's just identifying what it is. Because like I said, they come into my office. Okay, they internalize and externalize. So internalize is depression, self-harm, shame, which is also present in both cases, a lot of shame. So it's hidden. And then external is reacting it out. So you can see a pattern of over-sexualized or a lot of sexual activity, or you can see a pattern of deterioration going down. So all the way to significant depression because they're blaming themselves. So some of the causes that I'm seeing is our cultural messages. Because they're the message, first of all, that sex doesn't matter and that everybody likes a hookup and all these things. But what I'm seeing in session is that they think that because they've believed the message, and then they're telling me their story and talking about it, and they're like, we're just friends, and, you know, we just have a thing, and then we're, you know, engaging in sex, and yeah, he's probably fine, because guys can do that, but girls can't, and we can, we're going to have to shut off your soul for that, but you can do it, you can even possibly enjoy it, okay, it's a physical body, you definitely can, however, the next day, or immediately afterwards, shame. Okay? So there's this flooding of shame and regret, and why did I do that again, and you know, whatever. Also, when they think we're just friends with benefits, we're doing that, and then I see them, and they're devastated when they don't text them back, call them back, want to get together, want to do something. So I said, so you're telling me you're okay with just the hookup, being just friends? Yeah, yeah. So in my head level, they think that, they believe that because that's the message they've gotten. This is what they should be. But what happens is they're not okay. And we know they're not okay because they want them to text them. They want them to call them. Why? Because they want attachment. So we are made for love and connection. We were made for forever. We were made to be loved at a holistic, all the way around means. And sort of an unraveling, you know. Another thing I see is people just go through the motions. Well, this is what you do next. Do you want to do that? Right? Does your heart go like, I want to move forward with this person. I want to kiss them. Why you kiss them? You know? Not even sure I like them. Why are you kissing them? You know, like, oh, well, that's not even, not thinking. This is what we do. This is what we do. And this is cross the board, because this is what we do next. So when our cultural message is telling you that a hookup is fine, and telling all our girls, all our women, that that's all, you know, it's all you really want, and it's all you really need, and it'll be fine. They're not fine. We're not fine. Because we'd have to, again, we have to shut off our, all the other parts of us, and we weren't meant to be shut off. It was all in, all in. So the cultural messages and previous abuse will set the stage for that too, because we don't always recognize the difference between what is abusive and what is a healthy relationship, what is consent. Once we've been primed for that and knowing this, we attract it and continue to get it. And also, if there's any previous abuse, so date rape is more likely because they might be on. And again, I wanted to define date rape. I sat with my Bubba. He's this is my baby, who is 6'5". And I go into the room with him, and I say, Bubba, I just want to talk to you about something. And he's like, okay. He sets his stuff aside and looks at me because he's good like that. And I said, I want to talk to you about date rape. And I said, I don't think God wants you to be having sex. I think he wants you to wait. But just in case, and tell your friends, I want to describe the scenario for you. So he's not him. The guy will be, and it's mostly guys, okay. The guy will be on date, right? They go home. We're just going to hang out. We're just going to hang out, cuddling, making out, doing whatever. He continues, okay? And if that girl has any history of abuse, she'll freeze, likely frozen. So they're not really participating. So in my conversation with him is like, if she's crying, it's no. If she said no, it's no. If she's not participating, it's no. Error on the side of no. Because you don't want to be the reason that went too far for her. And people don't know how to say no anymore. Or they get afraid. So there's that. Where does that start? Pornography. So these kids have access to pornography and getting their sex education via pornography. Yeah. So then they're talking to girls like, oh, she want me. And believing it, though. You know, there's the guys who say things like that. But actually believing, teenage boys believing, that girl looked at me because she wants me. She made a face at me because she wants me. And believing it. I had a client, a teenager, and she was telling me about this, the friend of theirs. She's a big group of friends or whatever. She's telling me about this guy. And I said, does he watch pornography? And she said, yeah, he does. He spends like hours in his basement or whatever. She's talking about it. And I said, he sounds like it. Because if we ever saw what's happening in pornography, that's it. She is saying, no, she does always want you. She is all available. And if that's the only information they're getting, is that that is real, that's not real. That is not real. And that only serves him and does not serve her. So we got to be talking, you know, to those kids and educating them. So drug and alcohol use. I worked with victims of human sex trafficking. And Every single one had a drug-addicted mother. So these women are grown now, and in human trafficking. So this is not like across the country. This is not like got you from different countries and whatever. This is just right here in our own backyard. Okay, it's happening. Typically in the drug world, because there's such addiction. But these girls were already exposed when they were children. Because if mom is drug addicted or primary caregiver, people that are coming in contact with this child or coming into this home are not safe. And the child typically is unsupervised, right? Because addiction destroys people. Addiction turns people into what they're not and they weren't made to be. And so they can't. And it gets to be a hunger that they have to have. Well, then you can't watch your children. So in every case, mom of human trafficking, mom was, so far that I've talked to, had an addiction to drugs. So unsupervised children is a big deal because one, they're naive, okay? So unsupervised kids with kids, depending on age gap, right? There's like experimentation and then there's abuse because if one has more power than the other, then it can be abuse. So we gotta know, does somebody have more power than the other person? If they are older and have more intellect, more wisdom, more cunning skills, they have more power. Doesn't matter who it is. Could be the neighbor, could be the sibling, could be the uncle, whoever. So we want to watch for unequal power and be careful about leaving your kids. Pay attention. It's surprising. You know, like, we're just like, oh, that's just a kid, and they're just, especially ADHD boys, like, They're impulsive. Get them to be a teenager. They're all like, this is a great idea. You know? It's like, that's not a good idea. And they don't understand the ramifications of that at 14 or 13 that they're doing to a younger sibling always. So they know it's wrong, but so does everybody. They're all like, oh, this is bad. It's a secret. You know, whatever. Like that. But they don't understand how that is going to impact the rest of this their lives. And the Bible talks about not awakening it before its time. Well, it's already, that's awoke then. And then we have acting out of it. So if we ever see that, that's a symptom. Like watch for over-sexualized children. Because you only know what you already know. So if you've never been exposed, that's not something they're doing. When they do play therapy and they play out their lives, they're playing out what they know. They name those people things they know, you know, people they heard of. They name the little people and the behaviors that they're doing. They sound like that. My little granddaughter, she's playing. She's all like, okay, now you need to get into the car and you need to buckle up. You know, like she's just telling you her life, really, if you listen to her. She's like, oh, would you? Oh, it's okay. You're okay, you know. And then we're like, good job. Good job, mama. Because she's just taking care of the babies, you know, and she's just, there is not one bit of that. Bubba, when by the time he was 10, I was like, I'm going to have to wreck this kid. Because he knew nothing. Like, he was so innocent. Remember we were going on that run? Not running. That did not happen. We were walking, and so we were going for a walk. This is how I would always tell them. Okay, so I'd talk with them when we're going on a walk so that we can, you know, we're doing some activity. And I said, Bubba, do you know what sex is? And he was like, yep, good looking. And I was like, close. But, however, and so then we started having these conversations about it. And then they had at the science museum, because he's the baby, so he's never seen a diaper change. Like, he doesn't even know. He's not exposed to anything. And plus, his mind is just so, it's awesome. But I had to wreck it because he's got to go out in this world. So he's going to need some information. And, but he has this such a pure mind. But now he's, you know, he's almost 18 now, so it's he knows things. But he's like 10 and nothing. So then we went to the science museum and they had the body works and there was a baby there and it was a female baby. And we were looking at the female baby and he's like, Mom, did Grace look like that when she was born? And I was like, you mean the girl parts? You know? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, yep. All right. Goes on, you know, like, okay. Or one time we're sitting at the table and he goes, douche, says douche to Grace. And I said, let me tell you what douche is. And he goes, I cannot believe you told me that. Even after we had the sex talk. But by the way, it's like this long. The sex talk is this long, and then it's this long, and then it's this. It's not all at the same time. I ain't ready for that kind of stuff. I'm not ready for that kind of stuff. So I was like, I don't know. Wreck that. But I wanted him to stay pure and innocent and wonderful like that forever, but he had to go to school. So we're going to have to tell him, and I want him to know he can come and talk to me about anything. And you can. And he said, well, what if it's a swear word, Mom, and I don't know it? Well, I will assume you don't know it, and you can ask me anything. And I'd rather you found out from me than when you go there and they tell you something, you're not unsure what they're saying. You know, I had a friend, she was in her teenage years, and a boy, she went on a date with a boy, or she was with a boy, or whatever, and he's like, want me to make you orgasm? And she didn't know what he was talking about. So she didn't know to say yes or no or whatever. She didn't know, because she doesn't know what he's asking, okay? We cannot make an informed decision until we know what we're talking about. So I want them to have the language to talk about it. So if somebody does ask you a question, and nobody wants to look stupid, right? So they just go along with it. They'll just believe it and then not be talking. So we want to do that. They're disconnected, lack of attention, lack of support, lack of information. Right? So I'm saying, give them the language, talking to them. But if they don't have that, if they don't have connection with other people, they're looking for those people. Sometimes we think our kids are in danger. It's not necessarily always true. Single moms, we should know because the kids often are less supervised because they have to work. My mom had to work a lot, you know. So what are we gonna do? So just teaching them how to be safe and teaching them, you know, things like that. But So then we'll see symptoms. So this is going to happen later on, but you can see it in kids too, and mostly it's acting out, maybe bedwetting, and various things like that, tantrums, anger, anxiety. I mean, you're going to see, but what we're seeing then is naughty kid is the problem. And so then the culture is like, naughty kid, discipline the kid, even though we're not looking for what's causing that, you know, what's going on underneath and behind in order that we might get the source, okay? But we're looking for external and believe them. Somebody ever says, this is what happened, believe them. Error on the side of believing. One woman, I heard her story that she snuck out. So she's a teenager, sneaks out of her house. While she's out, she is raped. And then she's sneaking back in when her mom catches her sneaking back in and is yelling. You know, she just gets disciplined. She gets in trouble, which, right, she snuck out. But she's traumatized, right? So even though she snuck out, she didn't deserve that. But then in that moment, grows up thinking, well, I snuck out and I, even if it's not at a logic level, is it embedded in the body? Well, I did this. This was my part in this. That's why you don't get past it. That's why there's shame, is my own part. It is never that we're like, yes, they are wrong and I am right and I am innocent. That's never the conversation inside their head. Actually, they're not saying out loud, so. No, it is, oh, but I chose this and I chose this and this is my part and this is what I did and things like that, but it still was stuck, okay? So we gotta believe them. And then the shame that keeps it hidden is killing people, okay? External, internal. External is the acting out. So I had another friend who had sexual abuse history, and then, you know, so then in adolescence and adult, just a lot of sexual partners repeatedly over and over. Well, that is often because, one, we have control now, so we're choosing that. And two, it can't matter. So sex cannot matter then, otherwise I have to deal with that. Or, you know, or it does matter, and I have to deal with that. So oftentimes they're acting it out this way as adults or teenagers. Internally, they're maybe anorexic, bulimic, depression, anxiety, self-harm, suicidal. They might be, they're internalizing, meaning it's going on the inside versus the acting out is going on the outside. But both telling the same story, both feeling the same things, but it's just which direction is it going. So treatment would be being able to talk about it. I would tell my girls when I talk to them about date rape too, I said, if you ever go to a party and you arrive and there's just that guy there, and you're like, other people know that guy, but I don't really know that guy. And where's everybody else that's supposed to be here, but they're not here? And maybe they're coming, but they're not. And you have that feeling in your gut that you're just probably get out of there. But what happens is we think, well, that's awkward. I'll be awkward then. I'll be weird. That will make them feel bad. That will whatever. If that's a good guy, you can feel bad about that. Okay? So follow your gut. Get out of there, because that is the story every time. That's the story. So often they show up. So I said, okay, so all this talking about this is about the prevention of, right? So we want to prevent that from happening, but if it does, tell right away, okay? So that's not the end of the story, and sometimes we end there. We end with prevent, you know? This is, we don't do this, right? And then what if it happens? Now I feel bad because I didn't do the thing you said to do or whatever, you know? I didn't do the thing. You know, they'll be like, well, I was there or I drank or something. And I was like, so every time a woman drinks, does she get raped? And they're like, no. Okay, then no. If I turn on the stove, it's hot. That's what's supposed to happen when I turn on the stove. If it's not, it's broken. If I go to a party and I drink too much and not, if I do not every time, then no, that is not why. It's not because I went to a party and drank too much. Okay? It's not because I showed up and didn't leave when I felt that thing in my stomach to leave. It's not. That's not why. Because if that was why, it would happen every single time. Okay? It's not going to happen every time. You hit your brakes in your car, it stops. That is true. You know? If I show up somewhere and it doesn't happen every time, no, this is not your fault. It's wrong. Can we do some things to prevent it? Absolutely. Never, never, ever, ever your fault. No ownership in that. You're innocent. So then, and then I say, tell. So we can start healing. Okay? The end of our story is not the thing that happens. Yes, we want to prevent that thing. Yes. And death, because that might, you know, but eternity is right after, so it's good. But I don't want that to be the end of the story, okay? That's a middle. We keep going. We do not stop there. We do not shut the lights off there. We do not keep that to ourselves. I will believe you. So always getting past that, and as a compassionate witness, we're listening. Watch your body language, right? They already beaten themselves up. Right? This happened to us. We're already feeling guilty and we're looking for you to say we're not. We're looking for, because if that comes back at me and I can read you that it feels like I am, then one, I'm not going to keep talking about that, but I already feel that. So we don't need to add anything to that. I want to be listening. Counseling also provides that space. So if we don't have that space where we feel like we can tell that story and unload it and tell it again and again, kids, when they do play therapy, they act out the same thing over and over again. And then the reason they do that is it's what we call processing. But it's a lot like digesting food, right? So if you have a steak and you chew it a lot longer, you know, than you would applesauce, okay? So if a big hard thing happens, you're going to be talking about it over and over. So if people repeat themselves, that's okay. I never tell them they're repeating themselves. Like, yeah, tell me that again. You know, like whatever. Probably a new part of the story too. Probably a new part of insight for them as they're exposing this story and reeling it out. That it's not done. That's why. So why are we still talking about something? Anything you go through, anything that seems stressful and you just can't find your balance in it, it's because you've been knocked over and you're trying to. Have you seen people fall on the ice? the video. Yeah, so that's funny. And they're all trying not to fall, right? Everybody's trying not to fall. But then you fall, what do? Get up, right? Then you look around and see if anybody saw you. But, right? Embarrassing. But nobody wants to fall. And so once something happens that's unexpected and knocks you down, we're all just trying to gain our balance back. So we weren't expecting this to happen, it happens, and we're stuck. And so we keep talking, and it keeps replaying in our mind. Talk out loud, okay? Talk out loud because in your mind it spins around like a storm and there is no end. And we don't even know what to think anymore. It's like juggling. But you write it down, it has a beginning and an end. If you speak it out, it has a beginning and an end. You find a compassionate witness, somebody to listen to you and hold that space for you and make you feel safe and loved and acceptable no matter what, then we can chew it up and digest it and be done. And be done. We leave it behind. So and then EMDR, I really want to talk about EMDR because it is like a miracle. It's for all trauma, yes. And I use bilateral brain stimulation or TheraTappers. It goes back and forth, but it started with eye movement. And it's about reprocessing. So in the event of trauma, often we shut off. So we go into reptilian brain, which is the back of your, what's the first to form? That's our survival. So these are things we don't have to think about, like blinking or your heart. We'd all be dead if we didn't have that. We need that, okay? We don't have to think about our breathing. We don't have to think, think about breathing slowly, by the way. But you don't have to think about breathing. You don't have to think about blinking. So what happens in traumatic experience is we shut off cognition. So we're not thinking, kind of like we talked about earlier in the car accident, right? You're not thinking. I'm not planning out how I'm going to handle this car accident. I'm handling it. So in any situation in which this, we're sort of dissociating, you know, exiting the building, however we got to survive it. However we got to survive it is we maybe stare off at something, find a focal point, count. People count in their head, right? To escape the situation because it's too much. So they're not thinking. There's no logic and it's not talking you through. So we need a space where we can integrate left-right hemisphere between logic and emotion. Emotion's huge. Emotion and traumatic experience take up the whole body. Image, body sensation, all your senses, and everything over here, emotion. And then you have logic, okay? And logic's like, oh, that's not happening right now. And emotion's like, yes, it is! You know, it's like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. So EMDR has a way of calming that system down enough that it can communicate back and forth as it was meant to do, left and right hemisphere. And then with a presence where I'm present and I watch people heal. An hour. Like, all of the things? No, depends on the depth of the trauma, but something. I'm going for some sort of relief that they know right away because it's hard work. It's very emotional. And it's taking off some layers and busting out the lies and taking away the iceberg that's underneath any present day trigger. So EMDR is cool. You can Google it. It has a lot of research to back it up. And find a place that you feel safe in doing it. But it's good. So the next one. So again, talking to our kids about it, educating our kids, use the language, spend time with them. It's all going to happen in relationship. So if you have a relationship with your children, that's fun, right? I shouldn't come out of nowhere and be like, hey, let's have a conversation. Do that, definitely do that. But it's going to land a lot better if I already have a solid relationship with them in which we already talk all the time. You know, this is just an add-on. I didn't come out of nowhere to come have a conversation. So all the time, talking about the hard things, like I said, and educating boys and girls. So like, and I would talk to them about periods and everything, the boys, so that they knew how to treat women. And so far, so good. They're amazing people, so it's good. And talking about being safe and how to be safe, and then always, like, that's not the end of the story. Tell. Find somebody you can tell. And if you don't, it's okay. You know, because that's another place people get stuck is I didn't tell. There's a lot of reasons we didn't tell. Okay, so we're not going to go into that. But, you know, we're going to be like, yep, that's okay too, of course. Or I don't want to press charges, of course, because that's often re-traumatizing. So the woman at the well, the story takes place at Jacob's well, which way, way earlier, Dinah was raped. It's either Dana or Dinah because it's spelled like Dinah. But anyways, it's Jacob's daughter was raped, and then she was sold into marriage to her rapist. And we never hear her speak of it. And actually, she's named, which most women were not named in the Bible. But the woman at the well is, Jesus went out of his way to go to her. He knew she was there. She'd been married 5 times. She was with another man who wasn't her husband. And in reading this, it was by Kat Armstrong in the In-Between Place. And she was talking about how that it wasn't likely that she was a prostitute. A lot of times they were talking about how she has failed. She has failed. But in order to get a divorce in that time, it had to be the man's choice. It couldn't have been her choice. And in order to be taken care of, she had to have a man. Because they could do nothing without one. And if you don't have a son, which she had no children, which means she had nothing. She's nobody with nothing. And she's a Samaritan. And Jesus is a Jew. And she's a woman. Okay, so in that culture, we have to know what was happening in that culture, that he went out of his ways. His disciples were like, that is not the way. That's a long way. Why are we going the long way? And they walked. By the way, they walked everywhere. You know, some long ways. Went there, sat at that well. When she came in the middle of the day, which was the hottest part of the day, and that's not when women come to the well. Why? A lot of shame. A lot of shame. And he sat there and let her tell her story. And he listened to her story. He knew her story. He knew it. And he said, I'm the living water. He looked her in the eye and loved her, where she felt completely hidden and unlovable and in the culture bad. So that's what God thinks about that. He thinks you are incredible and invaluable, and no matter what has been done to you, he is available to you, and he didn't agree with it, and he wasn't there, but without free will, okay, even other people get free will too. Some should not have free will. Free will, there's no love. Because love does not come out of control. So if God was going to control us, make us love, he could do it. It wouldn't be love, and he's going for love. He said, Jesus is love. We are rooted and established in love. Love one another deeply. Above all else, love. It covers a multitude of sin. It is love. It is for love, because of love. It is love. And he loves you. And he does not see anything bad. Sees beauty and purity and innocence. And always we can return to him. Always.